asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
I'm Matt.
And today, we are answering your listener questions.
You know what, buddy? We've got listener questions to tackle today. We've got five voice memos to get to that have been sent our way. We've got a listener, and she's starting to have the problem of being able to afford some expensive family vacations. She wants to know how to handle that. Another listener is wondering, by paying off his credit cards too soon, does that mean that he's missing out on some of the different rewards that he is entitled to? And then another listener is wanting to know the optimal way to pay more down on his mortgage every single month in order to, you know, get rid of that loan a little bit sooner. But we've got those three plus a few others during this episode.
Yeah, we'll hit them all up. And by the way, it's a How to Money Monday, which I dig. I think you should be listening if on Mondays, every Monday, right?
We also sometimes I like to say How to Monday.
How to Monday. That's what we
It's an ask How to Monday episode.
We can just change the name of our podcast. It's always fun to tackle listener questions. But before we get to those, Matt, I wanted to quickly mention something my little sister is doing to save money.
Your little sister.
I hadn't really thought about before.
Aunt Sally.
And so they just moved into a new place, I think in the fall, into a new apartment in Midtown Atlanta.
Right. This is her and her husband.
Yep.
Is they.
Yep, the two
By
of
the
them.
Way, I'll say your sister. If anybody out there is wondering, Joel's sister looks exactly like Joel, just with longer hair.
Yeah, if I put a wig on, we would look the same.
Like scarily similar.
She's like 6 inches shorter than me, which is still tall for a female.
Yes.
But so I was like, oh yeah, well, when it comes to renewal time, you guys going to stay put? You like it there? And they're like, we like it a lot, but no, we'll move for sure. And I was like, oh, interesting. Okay, why are you going to move for sure? And they said, well, because of all the new apartments being built around us, these new apartment buildings are often offering just ridiculous incentives for you to come over there.
Very nice.
And leave your current place. And so my brother-in-law, he said, we'll probably get 2 months worth of free rent for moving. And when you're talking about something like a $2,500 a month apartment, that's a lot of money. That's $5,000,
that's
right?
Decent change right there. As long as it doesn't cost you more than $5,000 to move.
Right. And so, well, that's the thing. They're hyper minimalist, so they have very few possessions.
They just like throw on their backpack and walk over. They're like, done.
Pretty much.
Just got done moving in.
Pretty much. It's kind of insane how little they own. And so,
I love that.
Yeah, they prioritize travel. They prioritize owning just a few things.
That's awesome.
This is one of those ways in which they can move right down the street to another apartment and save a bunch of money. And so,
super cool.
I don't know how replicable this is. It depends on where you live and
How much crap you got.
Yeah, how much crap you got and how many new apartments are being built. But this is one of those things where you're not as likely, if you stay loyal, to get a major discount on rent. If they say, yeah, we're going to stay put. Hey, can you match this offer? That apartment complex is going to say, nope, no can do. So the only way in which you're just going to score the deal is to actually move and find somewhere else to live that's offering this sweet incentive. So, yeah, just news to anybody out there. I don't know if there's a new apartment nearby where you live and you're like, oh, yeah, I'd like to test that one out. Oftentimes, to try to get tenants in the door, they'll offer this thing. And so, and if they're being built at the same rate they're being built in Midtown Atlanta,
yeah,
you can like basically do this, use this recipe almost every year
perpetuity.
to save a lot of money.
I like it. It's a good tactic. It's a good approach, especially if you are into being the first person to ever live in a place. I mean, I've never lived in a brand new house before, so the idea of moving into a unit or an apartment or a house that has never been, like, nobody else has used that toilet before.
Right.
I'm going to use it.
Well, all the new amenities, too. I mean,
like
the pool.
Oh, my gosh. I bet they are incredibly nice.
Well, I remember the last place they lived had a speakeasy, basically. So it was like
in the apartment?
Not in the apartment, but like in the main quarters or whatever, in the main room. So there's some ping pong out here, like right next to the pool. But there was this
get through, like, the
speakeasy.
Phone booth?
Yeah. Exactly, basically.
And I'm back in this one closet.
Okay, apartments are getting too fancy. This is ridiculous.
Oh, I love it. That's awesome. But yeah, that's a good piece of advice. Treat your apartment building sort of like you would your car insurance. Don't stay loyal. Shop it around. But Joe, let's get to the beer you and I are going to enjoy that we're going to share during this episode. This is a Double Cloud. And not surprisingly, this is a double IPA by New Park Brewing. Another one given to the show by listener Matthew. And by the way, he doesn't spell it like you spell Matthew, my name. He spells it with a I-E-U. It's the more, like, is that the more European?
That's the hoity-toity version, I think. Yeah, he's more highbrow than you.
Which doesn't take much. So.
That's very true. Yeah. All right, let's get to the Ask How to Money questions for today, Matt. This is anybody out there, by the way, if you've got a money question you want Matt and I to tackle, we would love to take it on an upcoming episode. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask. We've got simple instructions there for you to record your question, send it our way so we can hopefully take it, you know, in a couple weeks on the show.
Yeah.
But let's get to the first one, Matt. This one is from a listener who thinks her family vacations are getting a little too expensive. They're getting out of hand.
Hey, Joel and Matt. I'm Tiffany from North Carolina. I wanted to get your opinion on this. My family is spending too much on vacations. We used to just do one beach trip a year, but it seems like now we're going on a trip for every family occasion. I love my family time, but it's too expensive for me to go on all the family trips. I'm single income, my family's pretty small, so when we split the costs, it's still expensive. At least it is for me. Right now, I'm trying to save up money for some home improvements and a few trips with some friends this year, so I'm kind of hesitant to budget $1,000 for a cruise for my nephew's birthday or a trip to see my second cousin this summer that will cost me about $500 for my share, and a few more trips that my family wants to plan this year. I've suggested small get-togethers at one of our houses instead, or a staycation, but my family is set on these destination trips. I don't want to say no to family time or making memories, but I might just have to. Any thoughts on how to handle this? Thanks so much, and love the show.
Ooh, seems like Tiffany's stuck between a rock and a hard place, because yes, destination trips, vacations like that can definitely get expensive. They don't have to be expensive, but it sounds like they are definitely getting that way for this family. It sounds like maybe they're experiencing some vacation lifestyle creep. Like maybe they started out kind of reasonable, and now Tiffany's all of a sudden like, wait, what's going on? Everybody got a bunch of money that I don't?
Sometimes it's a case of like one is fun, then like 10 must be even better, but then it becomes prohibitively expensive for other folks.
You know, like I almost feel like this could be considered a frugal versus cheap, because like I'm guessing that there's a chance that Tiffany's family might think that she's actually being cheap by not shelling out the money that it would take to make all of these trips happen. But I definitely appreciate the thoughtfulness that she is giving to her finances.
Yeah, I mean, you got to, right? I mean, it's true. There's all these sort of things out there clawing for our money. We talked not too long ago on a Friday flight about retailer tricks and how they're trying to part us from our money. They're using psychological tools to try to get us to spend more than we otherwise would. And this is one of those other things. It seems more benign and it seems more like, well, we should be funneling our money more in this direction. But we've all got kind of individual priorities that we have with our personal finances. It sounds like Tiffany, she wants to go on these family vacations, but it's also pretty expensive. And though it comes with trade-offs. And you know, it's not to say that her family isn't being thoughtful about their finances. I think some people might think that, well, they're just being spendthrifts. They're being frivolous.
They're being irresponsible.
Yeah, but that's not true. They might be in a different financial position, a different point in their financial journey.
They're in different tax brackets, man.
Right, exactly. I mean, that will...
Maybe. Don't assume that, but...
Or they might be going into more debt in order to go on some of these vacations, too. And so, that's one of those things. It's hard. We don't always have a window behind the scenes for other people, how they're spending their money, and whether or not they just have more money than we do, or whether they're like making an irresponsible decision.
That's true.
But I think whichever side of the argument you find yourself gravitating towards, both parties can intentionally spend their money in a smart way that aligns with their ultimate goals, and it could end up looking completely different for different people. I think Tiffany sees that, right? She's even said that the trips are getting expensive, at least for her. And
that's true.
Yeah.
It may not be expensive for her family, but at least for her, they're getting to be almost, untenable.
Yeah. And since it's your personal finances, like, you've got to make a decision based on what's going on in your life. And so it's worth pointing out that even when you have the same goals in life, in this case, it's to spend more time together as a family, how it is that you go about getting there can be wildly different. And so, of course, Tiffany wants to spend time with her family. She just wants it to cost a little bit less. And they've got this shared goal, but she's looking to take the more frugal path to getting there, which I think is wise.
Totally. Yeah. So let's discuss what her next steps could be, because she said that she's already made the suggestion, right? And I think she said something about a staycation, maybe someone in the family hosting the next get together. But it doesn't sound like she's gotten anywhere with that suggestion. And so I think one approach could be to specifically name it, right? Like, I'm talking about taking the bull by the horns and address that the reason you're interested in a more affordable option, Tiffany, is because you're looking to save some money, right? Like, maybe in the excitement of planning the next trip, your family members, they might just hear staycation and all that registers in their mind is boring. They might be confusing your desire to save money as a lack of creativity, right? Like, they might be seeing you being a little more frugal as you not having a sense of adventure. They're not really looking at the money side of things. But if you're able to tackle the issue of money more directly, right, like tackle it head on, then they might be able to interpret your suggestions in an entirely new light.
Yeah.
For once, they might hear what you're saying, which is, guys, I can barely afford these things and there are other goals that I have in life, as opposed to you sounding like, well, I just want to kind of stay home because, well, that's not, I mean, the point obviously is for y'all to get together, but they might be, again, they're trying to achieve that family time together by going abroad or going on some of these more fun vacations, like
sometimes
cruise or something like that.
If you don't name it, if you don't put all your cards on the table, it's hard for them to react to the underlying problem, right?
Exactly.
The underlying problem is that things have gotten too expensive, not that you just aren't adventurous, right? And so laying your cards out and letting them know kind of, hey, this is where I'm at and this is why I need or want to make a change to how we're doing this, I think typically will cause people to say, oh, okay, I didn't realize that was the why behind this. And I think it'll create some new conversations, a new chance for you guys to, well, one, start talking about money more in your family, which is cool. But also, I think will help your loved ones to start thinking about different ways maybe to get family time that costs less than maybe some of the trips they're currently
totally
embarking on. But if you do that, let's say, and nobody's willing to consider a more affordable alternative, then maybe it's time to move beyond suggestions and actually sit it out on the next planned vacation. Because I think a lot of folks are interested in saving money, your family included, and you might say something like, hey, let's find a way to make some memories together that doesn't cost a fortune, right? And I think that's something most folks can get behind.
Yeah, few folks are saying like, hey, let's take our next family vacation and spend as much money as possible.
Right, yeah. Hey, can we go bankrupt in the process? That'd be, how great would that be? Like, that's not typically the kind of the route that they're taking. And of course, they also, when it's time getting the loved ones together, the goal is often not to leave people out who can't afford to join, right? And so, yeah, I think a lot of people are interested in looking for ways to save money, but fewer people are actually willing to sacrifice in order to make that a reality, like you, Tiffany. And so it might actually take you politely declining, actually missing one of those trips in order to change the trajectory of these vacations moving forward. But, you know, it also might not change their actions. That's important to note. Like, you might put your cards on the table and they might still want to go on that ski trip to Aspen. But and then you have to make that decision whether or not you're going to participate. Either way, that's money that you've saved. If you opt to sit out, if you opt to not go on the trip, sad as it might be, you can put that money towards that home improvement project you're talking about or a trip with your friends instead. And hopefully you and your friends can get on the same page about a cheaper way to take that trip. And hopefully that just gives you more time to save up for the next family vacation. You might not be able to go on all of them, even though there might be pressure to do so, even though you want to do that. The reality is none of us can do it all.
That's right. Yeah. And she did say that it sounds like there's multiple trips happening, right? And so the ability to maybe, I'm going to do all the odd trips as opposed to every single one, or maybe I'll just do all the even trips this year, as opposed to it being this singular trip that where you would see all of your family members. It sounds like it's multiple trips. So maybe there are a few that she can kind of skip out on. Tiffany, I think that you can also demonstrate how much your family means to you by taking a more proactive role in the planning process as well. again, it's not that you are not interested in seeing those folks. It's just that it's more of a money issue, right? Like, for instance, you could say, oh, hey, that last trip looked like so much fun. I'm bummed that I missed out. But to make sure that everyone can make it next time, maybe y'all mind if I put together some ideas that we can all talk about? Like, it's, again, not that you're trying to completely take over, but you would just like to share your thoughts in go-getter fashion. I think that's a very diplomatic way of going about it without ruffling, you know, too many feathers. And if you were to do that, I can't imagine there are going to be many family members who would hear you say that and who would say, like, no way, Tahiti or bust, right? Even if other family members are loaded and they really do want to go to the other side of the world, they still can. But hopefully they'll see and they'll understand your situation and you'll all be able to find some common ground. Maybe some of those in-between trips will end up maybe being stateside. It'll be something that's more hosted at somebody's house as opposed to all of y'all forking out the dough and, you know, paying for lodging, paying for all the meals, as opposed to going to someone's house, utilizing the sleeping bag, going out and buying groceries and all cooking together, which, like, can be a much more affordable way.
A day trip, a stay in a yurt, something like that. I mean, like, there's a cool place near us and we could, like, stay at a yurt for two nights and it'd be so cheap and there'd be so much cool hiking and stuff to do outdoors nearby that I could totally see, like, us getting a family trip together there. But it's way more expensive to go international, right? Or even to hop on a plane and head somewhere. Mm-hmm. So these are the kind of proposals, though, that maybe they hadn't thought about, and maybe it'll be like a really fun way to take that next family trip that's less intense from a financial and planning aspect as well, and it can kind of provide a new experience for your family to embark on. So but you got to be willing to suggest that thing, and I think you got to be willing to lay your cards on the table and say, hey, listen, it's a personal finance thing for me. Like, I could have the money, I could come up with it, but then I wouldn't be able to meet my other goals, which are to pay off this debt and to be saving 10% plus for retirement or whatever. Like, be able to be willing and able to say those things out loud to your family members. And I think maybe one of your family members might be like, what's retirement? Like, how do you save for retirement? Like, you really could end up helping some of your family members out just by starting that conversation specifically on this topic of vacations and how much y'all are spending on them.
Please, Tiffany's got family members and they just want to retire literally on the boat. They're going to retire on the cruise.
That can work.
Because it can be affordable. But I liked what you said about making another suggestion just because it can often just switch things up a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, like, if you're used to going on cruises, there's only so many drinks that you can enjoy poolside while you're out on the ocean.
Right.
And I will readily admit that's not something I have personally done. So maybe once I do actually go on a cruise, I'm going to freaking love it. And that's all I'm going to want to do. But I got to imagine that there are room for some more affordable vacations out there, some more affordable trips.
And it doesn't have to be, let's just meet up
with our family
at our uncle's house. It really could be going on an excursion and staying overnight even, but it can be camping or, like I said, a yurt. I mean, it can be something really basic that can still be a complete blast.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we've got several more questions that we're going to get to during this episode, including, I think, we're going to hear from, I believe, the youngest ever listener to have submitted a voice memo to the show. We're going to get to her question about investing, plus a few others, right after this.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality, plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus 5-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in 5 delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the a.m. in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. And now a word from the show sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. All right, Matt, let's keep taking listener questions. And like I said before the break, we're going to get to one from a really young How to Money listener.
Hi, my name is Alina. I'm 11 years old, and I am from California. I have my own Charles Schwab account with stocks from Crocs, Walt Disney, Roblox, and Google. My question for you guys today is, I have $2,000 saved in my bank account. What are some good ways to save it or spend it? Or should I buy more stocks with it or save it for when I'm older?
All right, Lena, thank you so much for that question. It is always fun for us to hear from some younger listeners out there in particular who are doing awesome, correct things with their money. So we appreciate you sending that one our way, and we will do our best to answer your question well here. So first of all, let's talk about investing specifically in single stocks for a second here, because they can definitely be fun. They can be a great way to pique your interest in investing. And we don't necessarily want you to stop investing in some of the different companies that you do business with, different companies who you support that you are a fan of. But we would love to see you funnel some more of your future investment dollars into index funds. And the reason for that is because they are the cheapest way to invest. And it is going to be far less risky, even though you might be a firm believer in the products that Crocs, Disney, what else did she mention? Roblox.
Google. Yeah.
These are great companies. However, you know, you see some fluctuations in the market and you could see some massive declines within your portfolio.
Yeah. And Roblox might be popular today, but maybe the metaverse, I don't know, I'm not long on the metaverse myself, but maybe it becomes popular really soon and maybe people forget about Roblox. Or same thing with Crocs. Maybe Merrell makes the new hot version of plastic shoes and so Crocs falls by the wayside. Or, you know, you talk about OpenAI, the chatbot kind of stuff coming into vogue. And
yeah, maybe it's not Google who is leading that race. Maybe, in fact, it is Microsoft is Bing Microsoft's product.
That's right.
The also known as Sydney, the chatbot. And so it can be fun to invest in these single companies. But either way, we typically recommend no more than 5% of your overall portfolio invested within those single stocks, within those single companies.
In Lena's case, like you said, if it piques her interest, if it gets her kind of excited about investing, I see that as a plus. But I think now that you've got some money invested, Lena, now's the time to kind of start prioritizing index funds moving forward, right? Like, hold on to some of that Roblox stock. It's kind of fun to see what happens, but let's keep pushing more money towards those index funds, which are just going to help you build wealth over the long term. And it's going to be less risky in the process. But let's get to the heart of your question, which is about investing for later or spending more money now, which is such a good question, such a good question. And it's really everybody who kind of wants to be frugal and who also wants to build their wealth for the future. This is the question they keep coming back to, or they should keep coming back to, right? Should I save and invest more, or should I enjoy some of the money here and now? That is something that Matt and I wrestle with as individuals and that we kind of try to wrestle with here on the show, try to point people towards helpful ways to think about it. But lots of personal finance advice, they stress frugality. And we do too. We talk about frugality, but some people do it to the exclusion of enjoying yourself now. It's hard to give you a slam dunk answer as to whether or not you should invest or spend this money, because let's run some numbers really quick. The $2,000 that you got, if you invested it all right now at age 11, it turns out that money is going to be worth basically $100,000 when you're 60, You know, that's just assuming 8% returns. So keep that in mind, right? It's incredible what a small sum of money can do over basically 50 years, which is kind of the brilliance of you investing at such a young age. But it's also important to mention that we don't want you to allow the math to keep you from enjoying some of the money that you're bringing in now either.
Yeah, and obviously Lena's too young for beer, but this is exactly why we talk about our craft beer equivalent. It's why we ask every single one of our guests what it is that they splurge on in the day-to-day while still being responsible for their future, because this is what we do, right? We buy expensive beer sometimes, but it is not enough to derail our investing goals. And so, Lena, we don't want you to invest so much now that you aren't able to enjoy whatever your personal craft beer equivalent is. And also, don't forget about your more medium-term savings goals as well. You could start saving for a car now if you wanted to, right? If that is a priority. Basically, it sounds like you've got a bunch of money on hand that you're not super interested in spending at the moment and spending now. But guess what? There are likely going to be things that you want to spend money on tomorrow, or, you know, like the symbolic tomorrow, right? Like not literally tomorrow, but like down the road, you're going to want to spend money on something. I feel like over the years, that's something that I've learned where like I'm always surprised at how I change my mind on things. Even now at the age of 40, I still change my mind. Like even just a few years ago, I thought, you know what? Let's go ahead and renovate this house and let's go ahead and make some changes that we know we're not going to be able to get the money out of by spending extra on these things. However, it doesn't matter because we're going to live here for the rest of our life. Like literally, you can bury me in the backyard. And then 3 years later, we moved. And so don't underestimate your ability to change your mind. And by having this cash on hand to save up for some of those goals, it just puts you in such a great position. It puts you in a strong position to be able to afford some of those new goals that you might have there in the future, as opposed to financing some of those purchases.
Yeah. But and you're buying yourself future flexibility, right? By continuing to save and invest some of these dollars as opposed to spending them in the here and now. But I will say too, don't forget to use some of those dollars to spend now in ways that move the needle and that make you happy. Because I'm thinking about my nephew. He's 15, so he's a few years older than you, but his favorite thing to do is to go to the dollar store with his buds. And so he has keeps a certain amount of his allowance, and he spends a decent chunk of that on kind of those like fun runs to the dollar store with his friends. And I think like because like it stinks to say, oh no, I can't do that because I'm investing for my 60-year-old self. And while there is benefit to doing that, and while we wouldn't want to deter you from investing for your future, we would say it's great that you're doing it and you should continue doing that. Don't do it to the exclusion of fun things that you could participate in now with friends, right? And so I'm not sure if your friends are going bowling on a Friday night or something like that. Then that's something you want to do, then I would say go for it and make sure you give yourself the freedom to spend on things that matter in the here and now while you're also investing for the future. So it's just so easy when for certain people of a certain kind of brain wiring to save and invest incessantly and forget that it's important to spend on things that matter now. And I say that as someone who has that problem, who can sometimes save and invest to my own detriment in the here and now, but as someone who's grown in that as well. So Lena, I hope that's helpful. We want you to save and invest. We want you to be smart about medium-term goals and about long-term goals, but we also don't want you to overdo it and miss out on kind of the fun experiences that money can buy, even now too.
Yeah, basically what we're addressing here is what was not included in your question, which is some of the stuff you wanted to spend your money on right now.
Well, she mentioned that. She was wondering about spending money too, and like should she save it, invest it, or spend
right.
it?
Right, but specifically, as you know, she mentioned the single stocks that she's invested in. She's talking about the fact she's got the Schwab account. She's not talking about, well, I really want to save up for this immediate term goal, this sort of splurge. And so I think what we're trying to do here is provide some balance to the question that she was able to come to us with.
And it's easy to, again, give you those numbers and tell you how much money that will be years and decades down the road. And that's true, right? And so that's part of the reason to invest. But the other side of the coin is that all investing and no spending now can be pretty dismal too. But Matt, let's get to our next question. This one comes from a listener who wants to pay off his mortgage early. He wants to know how to do it in the most effective manner.
Hey guys, this is Dakota. I'm a CPA from Ohio, and I had a question about mortgage payment optimization. I recently purchased a duplex at roughly a 5.3 interest rate on a 30-year loan. I know the first number of years is mostly interest on all the payments, and because of that, I try to put down a couple $100 extra in every payment, and then a little extra on three paycheck months. But my question is there some way to optimize the amount of extra that you are paying on a mortgage payment? At 5.3%, I'm happy with the return on that investment versus trying to invest it in the market, but I can't say that paying off the mortgage is my main financial goal. I could probably try to adjust my budget and set aside more every month to get on the principal, but I don't know when diminishing returns might hit. Any recommendation on what might be the best way to optimize those extra payments, or if there's some sort of value-added calculator that I could use? Right now, there's roughly $100,000, that's left on the loan. Thanks so much for the help.
All right, Joel. This question, I feel like it brings up a lot of thoughts. So Dakota, bear with us as we, we might annoy you a little bit with what we have to say here.
TMI.
But first of all, we don't want to rain on your parade because obviously everyone's got different financial goals. But before you keep attacking this mortgage debt with the tenacity that you're currently doing it with, well, we want you to ask yourself whether this is going to be the best option for you or not. If you didn't listen to our interview last week with Tom Anderson, we would recommend for you to check that one out. But we've talked about the strategic use of debt before here on the show. But mortgage debt, it's tough for us to say that it's good debt, right? But it's the least bad debt in existence most of the time.
Oh, I might almost, if it's the good kind of mortgage debt, say it's good. Like, as long as it's like really low interest rate.
Except that so much of it matters, though, it depends on what you do with the money that you would otherwise put towards those payments.
True.
But we want to make sure that you aren't foregoing some of those other financial goals because you're so laser focused on paying off that debt. You said that you're happy with the ROI that you are receiving by paying off that mortgage early, but we do want to play, devil's advocate a little bit here.
Yeah, agreed. I like to play devil's advocate in my home. It annoys my wife sometimes because she's like, just tell me what you think. But I think it's important here, even though you said, hey, I feel like this is the best decision for me. It's not my number one financial goal, but it's something that it sounds like you're putting a lot of focus into paying off this mortgage. And we don't want to dissuade you from paying off your mortgage if that's your goal. But we do want to give you some food for thought, some things to think through before you say, yes, this is definitely the path I'm going down. And like, it makes me think, Matt, of a couple people that have been on the show before. You know, a lot of people in the personal finance realm, they've got differing opinions or at least different reactions based on kind of interior psychology. And Morgan Housel and Andy from Marriage, Kids, and Money, they, brilliant dudes, paid off their mortgage even though the numbers would have told them to do something else, right? And those guys, they're smart. I really like their work. And so it's not that people can't make different decisions based on the same information. It's certainly not a bad thing to prioritize getting rid of debt. But you mentioned the episode that we just did with Tom Anderson. Tom, he said last Monday that doing this impacts your liquidity and it reduces options that you might have. And I just want to mention, Dakota mentioned in his question that he bought a duplex. So my guess is that he's renting out the other half. He's like a budding real estate investor. And one thing that, Dakota, you could prioritize is to save up the money you would have used to pay off the mortgage more quickly in order to purchase that next property in the next couple of years. It maybe next time you get a quadplex, I don't know, and you start growing wealth by adding real estate to your portfolio. And so I guess my only thing is not that paying down mortgage debt is a bad thing, but it could prevent you from taking other actions that could really impact your ability to grow wealth for yourself.
Yeah. And in particular, when we're talking about paying off a mortgage that's got a fairly low interest rate, right? Like he's talking about a rate that's close to 5%. That's not bad in today's environment when you can earn like pretty much that much just by saving it. So Dakota, enough of all that. We'll actually get to your specific question here. Let's talk about optimizing those mortgage payments. And so if paying off this debt is one of your major financial priorities, you're doing a great job. Some folks will save up enough to make an extra payment towards the end of the year. That approach, that strategy, just that one extra payment every year, that will take 5 years off of a 30-year mortgage. It reduces the amount that you pay towards interest significantly. So that's one strategy that you can take. But I think that paying just a little bit extra, paying a little more when you have the money on hand, that just makes the most sense. And this way, there's less of a prescribed perfect way of doing things as opposed to more of an emotional or psychological win standpoint, right? Like, because basically Dakota's wanting to crunch the numbers perfectly. He wants to be able to enter the numbers into a calculator and get essentially the exact result. But I think what you should focus on instead, Dakota, is do what you know will yield you the highest results from a personal standpoint, like from an emotional, from that psychological standpoint, because you know that if you look at the numbers, the most optimal thing to do would be to not take those additional dollars to put towards that debt. It would be to take those dollars and instead invest that money in the market, or to take those dollars and to put them, save them up as another down payment on another investment property. But again, we've all got different goals. We've all got different levels of risk that we are willing to expose ourselves to. And so with that in mind, I would say worry less about the perfect amount of additional payment that you should be making towards that mortgage, and, you know, where you're looking at diminishing returns, and instead focus on the returns that you are feeling from a from a personal standpoint, yeah. Right? Like, this is where the personal side of personal finances comes into place, less about finding that perfect number, and it's more about the psychological wins.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what Morgan and Andy, the guys I referenced earlier, have told us. They're like, we know it's not the smart money move, but it's the best thing for us.
Exactly.
And if you think about it that way, that's totally fine. Like, make that move. Paying more quickly on that mortgage when you have the money in hand makes sense. Make sure that it's going towards the principal, right, and not towards interest payments. But yeah, if we're talking about overall optimization, paying off the mortgage like that, at least from a historical, numerical liquidity standpoint, it's not going to be the most optimized path. But personal finance is also not about fully optimized, because if it was, mm-hmm. we would have just told Lena a second ago to invest all her money and not think about having fun now, because that is kind of the most rational way to proceed. But we're not fully rational human beings, and we shouldn't be, right? We should have money to enjoy. We should use money to make sure that we can sleep well at night. And so hopefully, Dakota, you're able to take all of this information, because I don't know, I went into the back end of my mortgage provider, Matt. I was just curious. They had a cute little calculator dial thing in that I could kind of see, well, how much, what would happen if I paid a little extra?
Nice.
And it said, if I just kind of slid it over to $50, and it said I would save $12,000 in interest over the life of the loan, and I would cut 1 year and 9 months off of my payments. And I was like, that's pretty good. Like, just an extra $50, that would make a big difference over time. And so I see there's a psychological benefit in that, and I get why people would make that decision, but it's just not the decision that you and I have made, right?
That's right. Yeah. And again, I think it does also go back to what Dakota would do with those dollars otherwise, because I think that is why most people, like, that is the best argument for making additional payments on your mortgage, is because if you know that you're just going to spend that money, if you're going to fritter it away, if you're going to go on those expensive family vacations like Tiffany's family's doing,
yeah.
If that is what you're going to do with that money, then maybe it does make sense for you to trick yourself into squirreling away more by sinking that equity into that home.
It's the bird in the hand approach, which makes sense to me. Right?
Yeah. But if you know, if you can be maybe like extra disciplined and say, well, I'm not going to put that additional money towards the mortgage, but I'm going to set it aside. I'm going to put it in this bucket, maybe a savings bucket through your checking account. And I'm only going to use that money to invest in an opportunity that comes along, or to look for the next rental property. If you're looking to optimize, I think that is the absolute best way to optimize every single dollar.
Yeah, for sure. All right. We got more questions to get to, Matt, including a listener who wants to know about the timing of paying off a credit card balance and whether that impacts the rewards that he receives. We'll get to that one and more right after this. Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Kachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Kachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the a.m. in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Kachava. Just go to kachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's kachava.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Joel, longer days and warmer weather, it means our family is spending a lot more time outside. It's great. Like, literally yesterday, I was in the front yard, Kate was in the garden, and I was kicking the soccer ball around with a couple of the kids. I'm loving it. But something else that you can do for your family this spring, shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius as part of your financial planning for the year. Kate and I both have policies in place, and that means we have peace of mind so that if something were to happen to either of us, our family can cover expenses while getting back on our feet.
Yeah, with Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Even if you already have a life insurance policy through work, by the way, it may not have enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. On top of that, Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies. That means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
That's right. So save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. All right, we are back from the break, and it is now time to hear from a listener who is wanting to make sure that he is not paying off his credit card too soon in order to receive those rewards. Let's hear it.
Hey guys, Matt here from Winterville, just outside Athens. I'm curious about something with using credit cards. Do you still get the rewards for using a credit card if you pay off the purchase like immediately, or does it need to sort of sit in your statement for longer than a day? I'm just curious. I appreciate everything y'all have done for me and my family. Thanks.
Matt, we appreciate your kind words, and other Matt, who's sitting right here in front of me.
Uh-huh.
It's interesting. I feel like I've heard so much confusion over the years from people when it comes to when and how they pay their credit cards off, and they're not sure about how it impacts their credit score. They're not sure how it impacts their rewards. So while this isn't the kind of question we get all the time, I think this is something that lingers in the back of people's minds.
Totally.
So I'm glad we're able to address it today. A lot of people, and we'll talk about actually why it might make sense in some ways to pay off your credit card more regularly like Matt's doing. And I think one of the good things is it seems like he's allergic to debt, which is a good thing, especially in particular allergic to credit card debt, because that is one of the worst kinds of debt you could get into, especially now as interest rates have been rising, right? And there are actually a couple of benefits that you can snag by paying your credit card off regularly instead of just once a month. And so basically here's how it works. It's going to keep your utilization low, which is a major factor in your credit score. And that just basically is a fancy way of saying the amount of credit that you have available to you, well, using a small amount of that is going to reflect better and give you a higher credit score. So by paying it off like regularly, maybe once a week, or even like if Matt's doing it, maybe after every purchase, that is a way to keep your utilization low. The amount of debt that the credit card company reports to the credit bureaus is going to be minimal to non-existent, which just makes you look better from a credit perspective. But it's also got this added benefit of treating your credit card, which Matt and I have always said is a superior method of payment. For more on that, you can go back and listen to our recent episode about using your credit card the way nature intended, the way God intended it.
Mm-hmm.
But using it more like a debit card is an interesting way to kind of mentally approach it, which is what Matt's doing, right? Especially, let's say you've been riding the Dave Ramsey train, but you're ready to dip your toes in the credit card waters because you've been listening to How to Money or somebody else for a little while. Well, paying off your credit card more regularly can help you get accustomed to this new way of life, ensuring that you're using what we'd say is a tool properly. You're using it the right way instead of getting yourself into trouble with it.
Yeah, by paying that off more frequently, like let's say you are paying it off every week, it's a better representation of how much money you truly do have on hand as opposed to waiting till the end of the month and all of a sudden you have a massive shock to your checking account.
Which is kind of part of the breakdown for credit cards for most people is you're not seeing the correlation between spending and less money in your account.
So you're continuing to spend just like you got all this money on hand, but no, you've spent a quarter of your money already for the month or a half and you're spending like you've got it all still.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the psychological component of credit cards. That's the part of it that we don't like. But it is important to note that the credit card companies, they don't honestly care when it is or how it is that you pay your bill. I mean, you know, they definitely want you to pay your bill at some point, but they're more than fine with you taking your sweet time, right? Like, they're going to pay you your rewards, but if you pay late, you know, or if you just pay the minimum amount due, they're going to make out like bandits.
Yeah. They actually prefer you as a customer when you treat your credit card
exactly,
that way.
Exactly. Yeah. They do care. They want you to pay later because those rewards are going to pale in comparison to the interest that they can generate from the poor credit card habits from the majority of customers out there. Basically, 50% of credit card users handle their cards this way, where they're not paying their cards on time, where they are paying interest to the banks. That's not good. We don't want folks using credit cards if they can't pay their bill on time and in full every single month.
Yeah. But Matt, let's get directly to whether or not you get those credit card rewards, even if you pay off a purchase right away. So yeah, that taco you just bought at Taco Bell might post within 24 hours pretty quickly, but do you get the rewards immediately? No, you don't. Those purchases,
you certainly get the downsides of Taco Bell within 24 hours.
Yes, you do. I haven't had Taco Bell in many years because I've experienced those downsides.
Joel feels that in about 24 minutes.
Yeah. I used to. But those purchases, basically they're charged to your account no matter if you pay off that purchase that day or if you wait a week or even a month, right? That purchase has triggered whatever award you are entitled to. And it's not like it erases that purchase as if it didn't happen. So now, from a personal standpoint, when you're looking at your current balance, it looks like it's been erased, but not from an accrual of reward standpoint, because when you paid your bill or how often you made payments, it has no impact on the rewards that you're earning, right? It's all about how expensive that taco was. So feel free to pay as frequently as you'd like. That doesn't matter, but whatever method helps you keep your usage in check and your budget intact is probably the best one to take. There's just no need, though, we would say, to obsess necessarily, but if it works for you, then go for it. But from that rewards accrual standpoint, you're going to get those rewards after the statement closes, even if you pay off that expense basically right after it happened.
Exactly. Yeah, that charge has been posted, and even though it looks like, according to your balance, that charge never happened, to you, it looks like that charge never happened. But from a rewards, points, from a miles standpoint, it has totally happened. And as far as when you actually will see those points hit your account, sometimes it's like within a few days after you make those charges. But most cards, it takes about 30 days. It takes one billing cycle, essentially. I think American Express, they say it can take up to like 60 days before some of those points will post to your account.
But you're still getting them, and that's what's important to mention.
Exactly. Yeah. You're definitely getting them. Actually, the only card that does things a little bit differently is the Citi Double Cash Card. That's actually one of our favorites. We feature that one in our credit card optimization strategy. We've got a link in the show notes to that article that we'll make sure to link to. But this card actually pays out 1% when you spend that money, when you make those charges. But then you earn 1% when you pay your bill. So as long as you're paying the minimum amount every single month, again, this is not the approach, the strategy that we would recommend for you to do, to only pay the minimums. But as long as you're paying your bill, you're earning 2% on all of your purchases, which makes it just a great catch-all card for, you know, categories that you can't easily optimize further. But it's the only card that I know of that's not basing the rewards that it doles out purely upon your spending. It's also partly based on you paying that bill off. But Matt, it sounds like you're doing just fine with how it is that you're handling your credit cards. We would recommend for you to honestly just keep it up. We don't want you to log in every single day where you're making sure your points post.
Yeah.
It might take a couple of weeks. It might take more than even that full billing cycle before it shows up. We don't want you to stress over it from that standpoint. But if it is helpful for you to go in there, in particular, if you make a really large purchase, maybe you're booking some plane tickets or you're booking some lodging for some travel for the spring or the summer. And if that's not a charge that you want to sit there on your balance where you're taking up a large percentage of the credit that's available to you, well, then by all means, go in there, pay that balance off. But otherwise, if you're using it for your day-to-day purchases, I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Yeah. So Matt, hopefully that clarifies some stuff for you and you're all set to keep earning rewards and paying your bill off on time. But Matt, let's get to our next question. This one comes from a young investor who is looking to kind of ramp up her contributions and do even more.
Hello, Matt and Joel. My name is Logan and I'm from Missouri. I had some questions about saving for retirement. I am on Money Gear 5. I'm currently contributing 10% to my work 401k and only have $14,000 at age 28. So I want to for sure bump up my investing to 5% to meet this money gear, but wasn't sure if I should put it in the 401k or open up a Roth IRA. Also, I could bump up my contribution to 20% and come close to the 401k limit at the end of the year. if I do this, I won't feel my raise at all, and it would be as if I'm making the same amount that I'm used to, which would be tight since the cost of daycare of two children is pretty expensive. I was wondering if there was a rule of thumb to know if you're going to have enough for retirement. Also, last question, I hear you guys talking about HSAs a lot. My work has HSAs, but it's not my preferred method for our health insurance. If we are not planning to use an HSA for health insurance, should I still consider using it for saving for retirement? Thanks for all your guys' assistance.
All right, Logan, thank you so much for that question. Joel, we've always got to have at least one question that has to do with investing. So it's great to hear from another investor who is killing it. And Logan, you know, aside from future investing that you're considering that you might do, you are already socking away 10% of your income. And it sounds like you don't have any higher rate debt in your life. This is especially amazing considering that you've got two young kids in daycare. Ooh. Daycare is not a super cheap thing in life. And you're talking about bumping it up, right? It would be massively impressive if you are able to increase that to 20%. It just shows that you are living frugally. You are prioritizing investing in a major way. So just a massive kudos to you, Logan, just right off the bat here.
Yeah, those years with young kids, multiple daycare account. Like I remember when my first one finally got into kindergarten, or actually into state-funded pre-K, and I was like, whoa, man, what a weight off my back.
It feels like you get a massive raise.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah. I love the direction that Logan's going, because I don't know how old her kids are, but pretty soon it's going to feel like she's going to get multiple raises.
Yeah, if she can get to 20% while she's got two kids in daycare.
Oh my gosh.
Imagine what she's going to be able to do when both of them are in actual like school and she's not having to fork over any money for that. So to get to that point now, Logan, like, don't beat yourself up. I feel like you mentioned at one point, oh, I've only got $14,000. At the age of 28, that's a pretty good sum. And it's all about dialing up over time what you're able to invest and continuing to do it regularly, which it sounds like is exactly what you're doing. So I would just say you should actually be thrilled with where you're at and not upset about it. By the way, let's talk about which accounts you should prioritize. That's a big part of your question here. Should you stick it all in the 401k or should you open a Roth IRA? Well, we're big fans of going with your 401k until you've gotten the full company match. You didn't mention whether or not you have access to a match. I hope you do. So I hope that 10% you're putting in comes with additional money invested from your employer. But after that, we would say invest the rest of your dollars that you have set aside to invest into that Roth IRA. We like that for a couple of reasons. One, you've got some tax diversity when you do both of those accounts. The Roth accounts, they're superior for a lot of folks, especially folks who are earlier in their careers and who are likely to make more money down the road, which at the age of 28, my guess is you've got higher incomes in your future. The Roth is also more flexible than the 401k. Basically, we sure hope that you never have to tap it, but if you do need access to some of those dollars at some point in the future, taking contributions out of a Roth is pretty simple. You don't have to pay taxes and penalties. So kind of taking the both and approach, making sure you're getting the full match from your employer, then sticking some more money in the Roth, then going back to the 401k if you've got extra to invest beyond the annual contribution limits, we think that's the best strategy.
Totally. Yeah. And Logan was also asking about a rule of thumb for retirement savings to know if she had enough to retire. There certainly is. And this is important to mention because you're going to hear a lot of different conflicting advice, a lot of different numbers out there. For instance, a recent Bloomberg survey says that people need a grand total of $3 to $5 million set aside in order to retire comfortably.
Well, I just got demoralized pretty quick.
Yeah, this pretty much just sets folks up for failure because most folks are going to be unable to achieve this, even with great investing habits. And so a better rule of thumb would be to amass 25 times your annual expenses. We talked about this one in our recent episode on retiring early. But this is a great, simple way to break down how much you might need. But that 25 times your annual expenses is also an imperfect measurement. Because when it is that you retire, how much your spending is likely to change within retirement is going to have an impact on it. Whether or not you have a paid off home, for instance, that's going to have a big impact on your expenses every single year. But then also different sources of income as well, like whether or not you have a pension, how much you're going to be receiving from Social Security, that as well, right? Inflation, all of these things are going to need to be taken into account as well. But that being said, that rule of thumb, 25 times your annual expenses is a decent rule of thumb. So for instance, let's say your annual expenses are somewhere in the $40,000 a year range. Well, that means that $1 million within your retirement account would theoretically be enough for you to retire on.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the complexities, but also the rule of thumb. I think both of those things in conjunction, you can kind of hone in and figure out what that rule of thumb should be for you. You might want to aim for 32 or 35 your annual expenses because you want more padding. And that's kind of one of the things we talked about in our retire early episode too. Some people are like, cool, as long as I hit that 25X number, I'm going to be good. But they're not factoring in those other things. And
that's when I'm going to turn in my 2-week notice. Yeah, it's like, yeah. Well, maybe not. Don't quite do that.
Yeah, it could sink your retirement ship then if you haven't planned it down to, and you don't know, okay, well, I can definitely make it on that with some wiggle room on top. But let's talk about HSAs too for a second, Matt, because that's one thing I wanted to touch on that Logan brought up in their question. She said that an HSA isn't her preferred method for getting health insurance. What that means, I guess, is that a high deductible plan is not ideal for their family. It doesn't suit their healthcare needs the best, which is totally fine. We don't want the retirement tail wagging the dog here. It's true, HSAs are awesome, but only if a high deductible healthcare plan is the best choice for you from a medical and financial perspective. So don't switch things up just because we've talked about how great HSAs are and move to an inferior healthcare plan just to have access to one. For other listeners who do have a high deductible healthcare plan and they like it, your HSA should likely become your new favorite retirement account. We have an article about that on the website, exactly how to use it to maximize that account for retirement, investing inside of that instead of using it as a spending vehicle for current healthcare needs. We'll link to that in the show notes. But Logan, yeah, if a high deductible healthcare plan makes sense at some point in the future for your family and your healthcare needs, then that's when you would want to prioritize an HSA. But I would not suggest moving to the healthcare plan that's going to be inferior, that's not going to provide enough coverage, or that's going to cost you more money out of pocket just so you can put more money in that account.
Yeah. But Logan, if you are able to handle those costs out of pocket where you're paying those expenses manually and you're able to leave those HSA dollars untouched from a tax standpoint, well, then you're contributing funds that are going to be triple tax advantaged as opposed to tax advantaged, you know, just in one way,
yeah.
Like you are with a 401k or a Roth IRA. Jill, let's get back to the beer, man. You and I enjoyed a Double Cloud. This was a double IPA from New Park Brewing, donated to the show by Matthew. What were your thoughts on this one?
All right, I'm going to give three adjectives here. It was light, it was fluffy, and it was pillowy.
That's just because it's got clouds on the label. Yeah,
it kind of tasted like I was like going up into the sky with a straw and getting one of those like cumulus clouds, right? The big fluffy ones?
You're drinking straight hazy IPA straight out of the sky.
Oh, man.
Dude, I would say this had serious...
Sounds like a scene out of The Big Lebowski, if I'm honest.
This had serious tropical notes. Like it had like a... I totally get what you're saying as far as like a fluffiness to it. It had like these soft tropical notes. I don't know if it wasn't like guava, but maybe a little bit of passion fruit, but right out of the gate, that's what I was tasting, like these tropical notes that different breweries are able to tease out of hops. That's what's so amazing. Again, we've talked about this before, but IPAs, depending on the different hops that you use, you're able to pull all of these different flavors.
There's just all sorts of crazy, I mean, Australian hops produce different flavors. It really is kind of one of these fascinating plants that can produce just so many different varieties. I mean, I don't even know how many varieties of hops there are now, but just kind of the way they work in conjunction or even solo. Sometimes they, when a brewery will elevate a single hop and just use that in a beer.
Just the way they do it.
It's amazing to see how, like, the kind of flavors they can produce.
That's right. Yeah. And maybe you're thinking, well, I've had an IPA before and I couldn't even finish it because it was so dang bitter. Look for a hazy IPA because those different hazies are going to have just a little more sweetness going on. In my opinion, it makes them a lot easier to drink, makes them a lot more delicious.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, yeah, it can run the gamut. You can have one IPA that you love, another IPA that you hate. There's just all sorts of varieties for different strokes for different folks in just that one category of beer.
That's right.
But that's going to do it for this episode, my friend. Listeners, you can find show notes for this episode up on our website at howtomoney.com, including that article about the HSA and how glorious it is.
That's right. So let's get out of here, man. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations, prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to a Cross Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.